Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and other musicians, uncover their life stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, then stick around. You're in the right place. If you're enjoying this show and you'd like to support it, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/support. And for information on advertising, visit everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. Hey, everybody, this is Craig Garber. Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar. We are with a very successful, longstanding rock and roller, Ryan Newell from the band Sister Hazel. There you go. Ryan is about 15 years old, man. we're going to have an anti-aging clinic when this is done to figure out what the hell this guy's doing.
Just stay immature.
Stay immature. It works for me. A couple of quick announcements. Make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com/subscribe to subscribe to the audio and the video of the show. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit the subscribe button and the little emoji that looks like a bell. That helps us out with YouTube's recommendations. All righty, Ryan Newell, originally guitarist of Sister Hazel and still there, started playing guitar at 7 years of age, attended Berklee, presumably not at seven, and the UNT jazz program. Okay, Sister Hazel met in college in 93. That's a long time. They all went to University of Florida, and their first major label record, which is called Somewhere More Familiar, was certified platinum. The band's released 14 albums. They tour about 100 shows a year, and they've sold over 2 million records. All of their last five records have also hit the Billboard Top Country Album charts, which is a testament to you guys as far as being able to change and move around. The band founded the Rock Boat, which is an annual cruise that they have been doing since 2001, so going on 20 years, and also a charity called Lyrics for Life. The Rock Boat will be, we'll talk about that later, but if you want to check that out, go to therockboat.com, and the next one is going to be fall of 2021. Sister Hazel hosted their fourth annual Camp Hazelnut at Camp Crystal Lake outside of Gainesville in 2018. These guys are really involved with their fans, and they've set up a lot of programs to interact with their fans. I think that's really good, because somebody or you guys collectively said, hey, these people want that, and let's set this up for that. I think that was, you know, in music being what it is today, you need to have as many types. If your fans want that, hey, why the hell not give it to them, you know?
Yeah, that event actually, we tried to, you know, we have several events, like you said, that we just try to give for our fans. One is the Rock Boat. One is we have we call it the Hazelnut Hang, which is a bunch of people. We get together at a place called the Windjammer in the Carolinas, and it's on the beach. And it's, you know, we have that event. We've done a ski hangs where, you know, we'll do ski trips and stuff. And we tried to do a camping trip, and we decided to invite some of the kids from a cancer organization from Tampa, actually.
That's and really they came, nice.
And that event we decided to turn into a charity event instead of a fan-driven event. We just turned it into a charity because the kids enjoyed it so much, and we had a good time. It kind of defined itself once we invited those kids there. We changed direction, went, okay, this needs to be about the kids.
That's so not
that was a good one for us.
Now, somebody in the band has a story related to that, if I'm not mistaken, right?
As far as, well,
having a younger sibling with cancer maybe or something?
Yeah, it's our lead singer, Ken. He lost a brother to cancer when they were teenagers. And we actually, he founded a charity called Lyrics for Life, which is Sister Hazel's charity. And it was in memory of his brother, Jeffrey. And that organization, you know, we help stop children's cancer. And we also donate to any charities that any of the artists that get involved with. If they have a charity of choice, we donate to their charity as well.
That's really cool.
The concept behind the charity was, is we would, you know, get as many people as we could to write lyrics down to one of their songs on anything they could think of, you know, paper plate. Like, for example, Evan McCain's a pilot. He wrote it on a propeller.
Some That's cool.
Surfers who write it on a surfboard, and they give us the material, and we frame it up, make it look nice, and we have a show every year, and we auction off all those items for charity.
That's really cool. That's a really nice thing, man. I would imagine you also at the events. I bet you see the same people over and over again coming to the events.
Oh yeah. Well, we've done it in different areas. It started out in Atlanta, Georgia, but for the past 4 years, I believe it's been 4 years, we've done it in Gainesville, Florida. So yeah, and that's our hometown. So of course we see
a lot
of familiar faces.
That's cool, man. Also, let's see where I lost. Oh, okay. The band released a honey blonde ale called Ale for You with Rock Brothers Brewing out of Tampa, Florida, here in Tampa, earlier this year. I'll ask you about that. That's interesting. Excuse me. And living up to their fan-centered reputation, again, the band hosts annual events such as some of these things that Ryan talked about, the Hang at Hazelnut Isle in South Carolina, the Holiday Hang in Chicago, the Ski Hang in Lake Tahoe, and all of these things focus on creating unique experiences and interacting with the fan. Any the COVID Hang? Any of that?
Well, we actually were doing our second ski hang after we had taken a sabbatical from it for almost a decade. We decided to start the ski hang up again in Lake Tahoe. And it was right when the pandemic started. And here we are. It was, you know, 30, 40 people all in a cabin together.
Oh my God.
Watching on the news. And there's this literally on our flight home is when the country got shut down.
Yeah. That's crazy, man. That is crazy.
Strange times.
Yeah, very, to say the least. The band's music, Sister Hazel's music, has been featured in movies and soundtracks such as The Wedding Planner, Back to the Miners, Clay Pigeons, Bedazzled, and 10 Things I Hate About You. These are major motion pictures. And the band was named for a woman called Sister Hazel Williams who ran a homeless shelter, and she passed away at age 91 in 2016. Dude, thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on the show.
Glad to be here.
Okay. In your bio, it said you went to Berkeley and then UNT and then University of Florida. Like, you're probably the most educated guest I had on the show. What was the time? What was the timeline here?
Well, you know, I spent my whole life growing up in one town, one house, and I got to college and I was just a rolling stone. I was bouncing all over the place. I only went to Berkeley for one semester.
Okay.
And transferred from there. Ended up going to UNT, University of North Texas, jazz program.
Great school, great jazz program for sure.
Oh, yes. It was great. But I was there for a year and a half to 2 years. Maybe it was, yeah, I think it was a year and a half because I transferred in the middle of the year, my freshman year, and then went through my sophomore year. Long story short, extremely long story, but I changed my major from music to accounting, which I understand you were in accounting.
Yeah, I was an accountant. How funny is that, man? Talk about like a non-creative profession, man. It's like black and white, period.
Yeah, I just, it is a long story, but you know, for me, music was always my escape and it was my individuality and my take on it. And when I was in school, I loved learning, but it also became my work. And then I didn't have any separation from work and play. It's kind of like my life now.
Yeah.
But I love my situation now. But then I kind of was, you know, I'm just going to get a degree with something that I can fall back on and still pursue music. But, you know, I didn't major in music in high school, so I figured this was just another 4 years and I could play music and do it the way I wanted to do it. And I love playing jazz and I learned a lot from it, but it's really not my forte. And that's what I was doing day in and day out, was playing songs that were, you know, written in the 30s and 40s. And you know, I was kind of more of a rock player.
Yeah, for sure.
But so I got an accounting degree, transferred to University of Florida, because they had a better accounting school.
Yeah, they do have a good accounting school there.
And ironically, that's when my music career took off, is when I ended up not majoring in music.
That's crazy how that happens. Yeah. Did you go to, are you buddies with anybody from University of North Texas that is a musician now? Because I've had, I don't know, probably 30 or 40 people on the show at least.
Our drummer.
Oh, that's why. That's why. So you guys met.
He was there. He was there too at the same time.
That's funny. And,
we never met each other. We talk about it now. We had all the same friends, and for some reason or another, we never crossed paths.
That's wild.
Yeah, it's very bizarre. And our producer on our last, we put out a series of EPs. Our producer, Ben Jackson, he went there as well.
That's cool.
But yeah, that place was, you know, as far as the clientele and the teachers and the school, it was an amazing environment for music.
Oh God, yeah. I've met so many great musicians out of UNT, man. Okay. And then, so then you went to University of Florida, then that's where you met all the guys in the band, hooked up eventually.
Right.
Okay. Thank you for explaining that. You started playing guitar at 7, which is really young. Did you come from like a musical family or?
Well, my mom, she played ukulele of all instruments. So I got my fingers on strings really, really early. We had a piano in the house. My brother played piano. My dad loved music, but he wasn't a musician. He never went down that path. But you know, my family loved music and my mom played all the time. I grew up in a neighborhood where there was just a ton of kids. And there was one kid that lived across the street that played drums. And he was a lot older than me. My parents actually used to get him to look after me whenever I, you know, needed a house sitter or babysitter or whatever. And he would take me over to his house and play his drums. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to play drums at first. And then this kid was also in a band and he let me watch his band rehearse. And that's when I fell in love with the guitar, is watching the guitar player in that band. And, and I've been obsessed with it ever since.
Yeah. I hear you, man.
Okay. But, you know, I just to make another quick comment on that, you know, I did start playing when I was 7, but it wasn't like I was seriously pursuing the instrument at that age. At that age, you just kind of fiddle around on it and then you go ride your bike, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a slow process of actually getting serious about it.
That's good though, man, that you had that access and that you had all that music in the house. I'm sure that was supportive and encouraging. What was the band's first break?
Well, there were several. I would say when Ken wrote the song All For You, that I would consider that a break.
Yeah, just a bit, right?
We had some rocket sauce to put in the machine, you know, or into what we had going on. That song was really big for us even before, major labels or radio stations started playing it. It was huge at our shows. We actually decided to not wait for people to come to us. And, you know, we got the van and trailer and decided to travel around the Southeast and put on our own shows. We made our own CD. It was cassette tape, you know, the first one. And we didn't stop there either. We I don't even know if you could do it nowadays, but we would just march right up to radio stations and knock on the door. Hey, we're a band. We have a song that everyone seems to really like at our shows. Will you give it a spin? And a radio station in Orlando started playing it. A radio station in Tallahassee, Florida started playing it. And a radio station in Gainesville. And it was an interesting time because back then radio stations took a lot of pride in breaking a band.
Yeah.
A band broke on this certain station, then they got a lot of kudos and a lot of respect in the industry. And it was great because they would give you a chance and, you know, they gave that song a couple spins and the phones lit up. And it was something where they were like, well, if we want to be one of those radio stations, I think we're going to have a good chance with this song. And, they started playing it a lot and it actually charted. And that's when major labels started calling the radio stations going, who is this band that's charting a song? And then that started a bidding war for us, you know, with major labels. We ended up going with Universal Records. So that was our big break right there.
Yeah, but you guys hustled, man. You know, that's it wouldn't have. How did you get gigs back then? I mean, there were so many gigs to be had, but like nobody knew you guys.
The scene was very conducive for live music back then. There was live music all over the place, and it wasn't just one style of band. There was punk bands, grunge bands, funk bands, jazz bands, and there was an act. It was before the whole DJ raver thing started happening, and kids wanted to go out and see live music and not just cover bands. They wanted to find a band that, you know, was theirs and songs that were theirs. So that, and it was kind of their thing, and no one had heard of them, but you know, it was their band. So there was a lot of clubs that catered to original live music, and you could cold call them, send them a bio, which is your cassette tape or CD and a picture of the band and what you've done and what your numbers are kind of like and what they can expect. And then you follow up and you just start, you book yourself. And our manager, Andy Levine, who was our manager for 10 years, we had him, you know, from day one, pretty much of the band. And, he did a lot of that groundwork for us as well as the rest of us in the band, as far as getting gigs and a lot of it is word of mouth too. A lot of the bands had relationships with each other, and if they had to miss a gig and they needed to fill in, they'd say, "Hey, our buddy's
Sister Hazel's." Yeah. Okay. Cool. And,
you know, it just, you know, everyone helped each other out. It was a great time for music for sure.
Yeah, that is good. But there's a lot of hustle there too. You know, you can't.
Oh yeah. You're loading gear and wrapping cables and trying to get people on your mailing list. There was no email back then.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking that.
And paper, and we used to send out mailers to people's, get their address, and we'd, you know, print up a little 2-sheet mailer and send it out, keep people posted on our dates and, you know, funny tidbits about the band. All the stuff you do online now, you know, we were doing it.
But man, when you got those, because I would get those from various bands and it would be like, wow, this is so, because I knew those guys were sitting there licking stamps.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I knew that this was not like some big mega corporation, you know, and it meant a lot, you know.
Yeah, CDs, we stuffed them ourselves. You know, your CDs don't come already packaged.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
You need a case and you get the little J card or the card and you have to assemble them yourself and stack them one at a time, thousands of them.
Yeah, that's great, man. Great story. You guys have been together, same members, for almost 30 years, which is, as you know, way long. Now, I'm not saying you know because we had this conversation. You know, in general, it's longer than most marriages. And I think it's even harder because with a marriage, you got two people. With a band, you know, you got five people involved and then all their families. What do you attribute this the unity or the ability to stay connected? Because that is definitely not the norm.
Well, it's not easy, but it gets easier with time. And a lot of people do compare it, you know, as included, to marriage. But I will say one thing that makes it a little easier than marriage is because there's multiple people. If you're in an argument, say with the bass player and either you're out of line or the bass player's out of line, you have someone else in the band saying, I think maybe you might need to reassess your opinion here. But in a marriage, you don't get that.
No,
you
it's...
You don't have a referee.
Yeah, okay. I see what you're saying. That's interesting.
We've got, you know, referees in the band that, you know, we keep all of us and each other in check. But I think first and foremost, we got lucky. I mean, we genuinely like each other, and we would be friends whether we were in a band or not. A lot of bands aren't like that. A lot of bands, they don't really care for each other, but they make great music together.
Yeah.
Fortunately, we have both. You know, we genuinely like each other. We have the same moral compass. We grew up with the same values. So we got lucky in that sense. Another thing that I think we benefit from is we share the same sense of humor. And that really keeps things together, probably more than anything else. When you think you just can't hold on anymore, someone will crack a joke and you laugh and it all just goes away. And you realize why you like each other. You know, if you can keep everyone smiling, that goes a long way. And we've also learned too that you've got to, as cliche as it sounds, it's so true. You have to pick your battles.
Yeah, man.
We used to fight over everything. You know, I've said this in interviews before. One of our biggest fights starting out early on, I was recording our second record. It was over a tambourine part in the studio.
Oh, my God.
And that was the big lesson that we had, is right in the middle of almost coming to blows, we all go, you guys do realize we're fighting over a tambourine part.
Wow.
Of course, there's probably way more involved emotionally, and it's probably was the straw that broke the camel's back. But when you put things into perspective, you know, after being in a band that long, we tend to remind each other that, hey, if it's not going to bother you in 6 months, let's just not even go through the hardships of it. Let's just let it go. And 6 months from now, we won't care.
That is a great perspective to have in any relationship, actually.
It's really hard. It's really hard to practice, though. It takes a lot of discipline. It
gets easier as you're older, though, because you just don't have the freaking horses. It's like so much easier. I don't know, for me, anyway. It's like,
that's part of it too, is, you know, the older you get, the lazier you get when it comes to arguing with someone. It's like, do I really want to spend my day in a tiff with somebody? It's like, no, I won't care about this next week, so let's just blow it off.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Thanks for sharing. That was really interesting. What prompted you guys to do the Ale For You beer, obviously taken off the song, All For You? What was the, like, what made you guys get involved in that? I'm assuming you all like drinking IPA or whatever, but.
Well, we've dabbled around and maybe possibly doing our own wine. That didn't pan out for us. We still might do it. But we became friends with the guys from Kevin Lilly down in Tampa. And we were playing a show with Hootie and the Blowfish. And not to say we were trying to copy them, but they had their own beer out. And the guy that was helping them out, Kevin Lilly, he was has been and was a fan of Sister Hazel and would talk to us about it all the time. And that was just seemed like the path of least resistance. Not only that, but they do a really great job. And, you know, they were willing to work with us to find the exact flavor and all that. And that's really how it came to be. And we did a bunch of tastings and went back and forth and finally came up with something that
that had to be fun. The tasting part.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
We had a spittoon. So you didn't get, you could use it or not use it.
All right. That's cool. And so how long ago did the Ale For You come out?
It was debuted on the Rock Boat, 2000, our 20th Rock Boat last year.
Does
actually it was 2020 or when was it No, it was right at the beginning of this year, 2020.
Do you guys sell this retail, or is it only like in for your events?
It's still in its genesis stage.
Yeah.
And right when it got off the ground, COVID hit and everything just kind of, you know, I tell everyone I want to get a shirt that says dot, dot, dot. Then COVID happened.
I know, man. Dude, believe me, yeah. I know. Everybody I know is in the same boat, regardless for the most part of what industry.
But yeah, you can get it online currently, but you know, we're working on getting it in different regional stores and
stuff. Which is so tough to do in general.
Everyone has a beer now.
It's just, you know.
I get confused. I get dizzy walking down the beer aisle now.
Well, plus it's a job, man. You got to, you know, think about what you did to get your music out there. It's kind of like the same thing, man. It's like a full-time gig getting, you know, one brand out there. And then, you know, it's not easy. It's definitely not easy.
We have so many lifestyle events, you know, like our cruise, our ski trip, our beach hang, our camping thing. We thought, how great would it be to, you know, we've got the music to go along with this. That's our soundtrack to our lifestyle. Why not have a beer for our lifestyle?
Yeah, you know? Sure. But
that being said, too, we don't want to promote it too much because, you know, Ken, our lead singer, he's been sober for 15 plus years. And we're not really the band to go around promoting alcohol.
Yeah.
But in this case, you know, it's a drink responsibly type situation.
Yeah, I think in any band, you got five people, one of them's going to be sober.
Right.
Or not, you know, but you know what I'm saying?
It's been a band for 30 years.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's just random statistics, you know. But yeah, I don't, you know, and I think IPA, I don't think like nothing negative, you know, I don't think like cocaine, you know, nothing negative. Yeah. It's like every just a relaxing kind of a deal, you know? Well, good luck with that, man. I hope it does really well for you. Thank once you. Dot, dot, dot after COVID, you know,
and then COVID happened. Yeah.
You have any, Ryan, do you have any other side hustles going either in the music business, or outside of music completely?
Well, when I lived in Atlanta, I used to produce records, other people. But since I've moved here, I haven't had a chance to really connect too much with the studios here and the local bands and stuff. But as far as, you know, when you say hustle, as far as alternate income or anything like that, I've been investing since I was in college. So I invest a lot, and I'm not a day trader by any means, but definitely active in the market.
Dude, now I don't know if I'm sure you've seen it. Like day trading has been exploding since COVID because everybody's home.
Well, I'm not a big fan of day trading. I like to find something good and sit on it.
Mm.
So by the time you pay your capital gains and a lot of day trading, you know, you can't buy back in and till a certain amount of time, and then you lose the big spike. And I'm a fan of just believing in something and waiting it out.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing though. I've read so many
time in the market. Yeah.
So many articles about day trading. How it's, in fact, I know a few guys who got into it.
Now options, I do options, and it's not really day trading, but if you need to do something to keep yourself busy, if you're at home because of COVID, trading options can be fun and dangerous. But
I was going to say, you got to know what you're doing there. You can't casually trade options, man. Yeah. I mean, you can, I guess, but I certainly wouldn't. What were some of the low points or dark periods you've had to deal with, and how'd you get through them?
Well, I'd say a big low point in my life is I've been through a divorce. That was excruciating. And I got through it with the love and support of all my friends and family.
Very cool.
One step at a time. Everyone rallied around me, and I ended up, you know, we didn't have kids together, but I had two dogs. I didn't know what to do with them. And the band was like, bring them on the bus. you know, so we had two bus dogs.
That's cool, man.
The pick up and drop off for the bus ended up being my house. So I would just walk out my front door with my two dogs and get on the bus, go do a tour and come back, and they drop me right off. So
that's wild.
Wasn't flying or any of that. So no, everyone really pulled together, and I had a lot of help from a lot of good friends.
That's cool, man. Yeah. Divorce is a weird thing. It's like marriage is, you don't have a frame of reference for it, but it's like a very natural thing. But when you unwind it, it's a, because I had a divorce many, 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 many years ago. It's a very weird thing to,
yeah,
it's very unnatural.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like, it's like, only thing I can compare it to is death. You know, it's like a death.
Well, it is a death. It's a death of a relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Well, glad you got through that. If you could go back and give advice to young Ryan, assuming you'd listen, is there anything you would have told yourself that would have made your life easier, either personally, career-wise, anything?
Buy Apple stock.
Right on, right?
I used to worry a lot about my future, you know, which I'm sure is the natural thing to do when you make a living playing music. You're always worried that it's gonna end, it's gonna be over. What am I gonna do? And if I would have known the outcome of my career, and I could go back and tell my younger self, I'd tell myself to stop worrying and trust the process and try to enjoy yourself instead of worrying all the time.
Yeah, man, that's good advice no matter what you do. Really?
Yeah.
Thank you. All right. Let's talk about your SG, man. I always see you playing, or I usually see you playing an SG. How did you get hooked up with your, you know, how did an SG come into your life, and what's your go-to guitar right now? And what other couple of guitars would round out your top three? Cause you got a bunch of nice looking ones back there. You got Les Paul, you got Brian May.
The SG was my first electric guitar. I like the SG probably because of, I think I was in fourth grade when I got my electric guitar, maybe even third grade. But it was probably Angus Young.
I was just thinking that.
You see. And then Dwayne Allman. But I wasn't hip and cool enough to be that influenced by Dwayne Allman at that age. So it was probably,
but you're a little younger too. You're probably about 10 years off the mark.
Yeah. But no, I love the look of that guitar. And I asked my grandfather if I could get one. And he said, why don't we look in the classified ads and see if we can find a used one. And we did find one. And it was when I was visiting my grandfather in Florida. And he said, well, I don't know anything about guitars, so I don't know how to pick if it's good or bad. Why don't we call up this music store and meet the guy there, and someone at the music store can look at it. So we show up.
Where was this, in Central Florida?
It was in South Florida, Fort Pierce, Florida.
Okay, so south. Yeah, south of me.
Coast, yeah. So we show up, and the guy pulls out the guitar, and the guy at the music store checks it out for a long time. And he's like, yeah, it's a great guitar. I'd buy it. So I think we bought it for $250 or something.
Oh my God. That's the best investment you've made.
Yeah. And then when the guy left the store, we were still in the store. The guy that checked out the guitar said, look, I wasn't going to say anything about this because I didn't want to, you know, get involved. He goes, but I really wanted to make an offer on that guitar. He goes, but I'll make it to you. I'll give you $1,000 for that guitar right now. And my grandfather's like, take it, take it, take it, take it. And I said, no, I fell in love with the guitar immediately. I said, no, I want this guitar. And the guy was like, you sure? You look at all the other guitars you could have in here, brand new. And I knew even at that age, I was like, this guy wants that guitar so bad, it's got to be a good one. And sure enough, you know, I didn't know anything about guitars other than what the name of it was. But It's a 1967 Gibson SG.
Oh my God.
For $250 back in the '80s.
Slim neck. Nice slim neck probably.
Yeah. It's a slim neck. I still have it. It's crumbling right now. So I don't use it on the road anymore. It's in a glass case, but, I used it to record, the first two records, Sister Hazel Records.
That's cool.
Toured with it forever. And then it just started to kind of, you know, get beat up on the road. So I took it off the road. But yeah, so I've always played SGs. And I, you know, of course I play other guitars as well, especially in the studio. And I've had periods of time where I would just play another guitar for a long time. And then I'd pick up the SG and it would just feel like home. Yeah. I'm like, why am I not playing the SG? I actually sound and play better on it, you know? And, then I'll go through phases where I'll play another thing. And, but I always gravitate back to the SG. I have, 1, 2, 3, let's see. Yeah, 4 SGs.
Are they all vintage or various years?
2 of them are 61 reissues. One is my 67. And then one is a, I think it's an 06. Yeah.
That's the one I just sold, the 61 reissue. I mean, it's just, I loved it. Everything about it, but I couldn't play it. How do you manage the neck? Because it weighs more than the body. I mean,
There's neck. Yeah, there's neck dive. They call it neck dive on it. I don't really notice it. Maybe just because that's how I learned how to play guitar.
Yeah,
it just feels normal to me. And you can put your arm on it here, and it just kind of stays.
Yeah.
So I don't really notice it that much. I just the hardest thing, but the hardest challenge for me with SGs is keeping them in tune. And I'm a freak when it comes to tuning, you know, for decades, even in the middle of songs, I'd hit the open G when I had to play a G chord, I'd just hit the open G and tune it real quick, you know? But I'd be tuning between songs and, you know, it became really cumbersome, but I'd rather take the 2 seconds to tune a guitar than play out of tune for the whole song.
Oh God. Yeah. That's just sticking in your brain there, man. It's not. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But I just recently got a new SG, specifically for the point of putting in a piece of new technology that keeps your guitar in tune. It's called Evertune. And what they do is they route out your guitar and they put springs and levers in it. It's nothing electronic. It's all just metal springs and levers, and it keeps your guitar in tune.
That's interesting.
You can take the strings and hold your guitar like this and stretch it like crazy and then play a chord and it's in tune. It'll stay in tune for as long as you don't change the strings. I mean, you have to tune it once every time you change a string.
That's great, man.
And it'll stay in, you know, our longest break we've ever taken. Well, not pretty much. The longest break was this COVID break, and took the guitar out of the case for a virtual gig that we just did last month. And the guitar was in tune perfectly, like studio in tune.
That's so cool.
Perfect. So it's called Evertune. It's brilliant. And I bought a new SG just to get that so I could, you know, when we play festivals and shows and you have the sunlight hitting your guitar, or if it's cold outside and the wood starts moving, this thing will compensate for it.
That's amazing.
And you know, I'm always into new technology and trying new things. And most of it, the band rolls their eyes at, but this was the one thing where they went, all right, Ryan, we buy this thing. How can I get one? And now Drew has one too.
Oh, that's good.
But it's amazing. I don't even understand how it works. It's just people smarter than me figured it out.
That's awesome. What's your like number 2 and number 3?
Well, I have a backup SG on the road, just in case I break a string. But as far as changing it up, I have a jazz guitar.
What do you have?
It's actually, believe it or not, it's a Squire. the J Mascis signature model.
Yeah, I know that guitar.
I spent more on the replacing the tremolo than I did buying the whole guitar.
I'm sure.
The tremolo cost more than the guitar itself. But I put a roller bridge on it, replaced the tremolo, and put locking tuners on it. It's one of my favorite guitars. It sounds great. It plays great.
He's a great guitar player, man. He's under the radar.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I didn't even buy it because of any association with him. I just love the guitar. I mean, not to diss him at all. He's amazing.
Yeah, sure.
But I would have bought the guitar if it said Fred Flintstone on it. It's just an amazing guitar.
How did you find that guitar? Like, did a buddy of yours turn you on to it? Or?
Well, I wanted to get a jazz, and I was just, doing some research and it had rave reviews and people saying they couldn't believe how good it was for a Squire. And it was cheap enough for me to just try,
Yeah. There's no downside if it's not. Yeah.
I just tried it, ordered it online, and I was super impressed. But another one of my favorites is, you can see behind me,
yep,
Les Paul. I think that's a 2013. That thing plays incredible.
Is that a custom?
That's a standard.
It's a standard, yeah.
And then, I have a ton of guitars, a ton of them, and I love all of them.
Do you play them all?
I play them all at home.
Yeah.
And what I usually do now for fun is I'll just bring a new one out in a gig bag if I'm flying to a show and just use that one as an alternative guitar for that week of shows.
That's cool, man.
And switch it out, and it just keeps things interesting. I mean, my guitar tech hates me for it.
It definitely keeps things interesting, man.
Yeah.
What are you playing through most of the time?
Well, I started out in high school playing, my first amp was a PV, just like every other kid in the 80s. And then I got a Marshall half stack, a JCM 800.
Dude, then got one of those sitting there right here.
Oh, yeah.
It's phenomenal. Great. I love it.
Yeah, yeah. Mine was the actual half stack, the head and the 412 cabinet.
Oh, my God. That's way too much firepower for me.
So, needless to say, when I went to college, I unloaded it, and I wish I didn't sell it because I would use it now, at least the head.
Right.
But I sold that. In college, I used a combo called a Tube Works for a little while, and then went straight Fender Twin for years, played Fender Twin for a long time. And then I got hipped to the Matchless DC-30.
Sure.
And I used that from probably 2002 to about 2 years ago. And that amp was amazing. The DC-30. I had one of the early versions, one of the first ever made, early 90s version. Bought it used on eBay. And that thing is just amazing. And, I would still use it, but I've, like I said earlier, I get into new technology and new things start to excite me. And after playing through pretty much the same rig for all those years, something else just started to inspire me and excite me. And that's the Fractal Axe Effects. And started using that. And now I can get stereo delays and different rigs all at the touch of a foot pedal. And it sounds amazing. And in the studio, of course, I still use real amps and all that stuff. But as for live, I've gotten just as many, if not more, compliments on the live sound now than I've ever had. And I have a wireless too, so I've gone in front of the PA just to make sure, because it can sound good in your ears and then doesn't translate through the PA. But I would literally walk in front of the PA and play to see what it was sounded like, see what it sounded like, and it sounds great.
That's awesome, man. It's how convenient is that too, man?
Oh, and you don't have to worry about temperamental tubes and whether it's the right power or anything. It's the exact same rig every time you turn it on.
Yeah. Yeah. I know a lot of people are moving there. Do you remember the first album or cassette you ever purchased?
My grandfather bought me AC/DC record. I believe it was Powerage. Some people call it Powerage. Some people call it Powerage. But it's spelled Powerage, one word.
Yep.
So probably that AC/DC record. That's the only one I can remember. But I didn't need to buy records because I had a brother that was 8 years older than me.
Oh, right on.
And he was heavily into music, and he had everything.
And he
was an older brother that would actually let his little brother mess around with his record collection. So
that's cool.
Yeah, he gave me full access to just tons of music.
Really awesome. Give me your top three Desert Island discs just for now, just for like a minute.
Just for now. That changes every day.
Oh, dude, I could ask you a question in 2 hours. It might change.
Let's see. Wow. Okay. I've always loved Rolling Stones' Exile on Main Street.
Mm-hmm.
Like that album. Of course, Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon.
That's my number one.
I'm kind of going all time here, not just today.
Yeah.
I like Pat Metheny, Bright Side's Life. I could keep going.
Man, you know how many guys from UNT have named that as their record of...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Surprising. That's kind of a rare record. But the playing on it with Jocko and Pat and all that, it's an insane record.
I think he's a little younger than you. Do you know Mark Lethierry by any chance?
He's the guitar player for...
Snarky Puppy. He's one of the... Yeah.
He's amazing.
Yeah, he's great. He went to UNT. Yes. And... I'm almost positive that was one of his top three.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That guy's amazing.
Yeah, he is amazing.
Recently, since Eddie Van Halen's passing, we've been doing some drive-in shows, and I've been doing a tribute to Eddie playing Eruption and stuff. And
that's pretty impressive.
So I've been listening to a lot of Van Halen. I actually... bought the Frankenstein guitar.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I actually got it right here.
Let me see it, man. There you go.
Isn't that cool?
That is very cool. So where did you get that?
It was a store in LA because they're all back ordered. You can't even get them now.
Yeah, I'm sure because of Eddie's passing.
Checking the Reverb.com app, and it just always said pre-order, pre-order, pre-order. And then one day one just showed up. I guess someone realized that they hadn't put it online yet. And he put it online and I snagged it. But I think the wait time now is like April to get one of these things.
Oh my God. That's a great problem to have for the manufacturer.
But I've been having a lot of fun going back and learning how to, cause I grew up on Eddie Van Halen, but I never really learned his stuff. Because when I listened to him, I was so young, I couldn't play his stuff. So
sure.
I didn't even bother trying to go there. But now it's been fun to go back and learn some of the stuff that I've always wished I would have known how to play, but I didn't have the technical ability. And now I can kind of squeak it out. So it's been fun.
That's nice, man. And you get your new toy to play with, which is always a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Tell me the best decision you ever made.
Marrying my wife. That's probably the standard answer, right?
it's not. You would think it is, but it's not. It's like 25 to 33%.
Right.
Yeah, you would think it would be. And like, I've had some guys like have really long-term marriages. And I'm like, oh, he's going to say marrying his wife. And it never comes up. It'd be like, probably deciding to move from here to there or, deciding to play guitar or joining that band and hooking up with this guy.
Right.
It's always a mixed. I don't think that means this person like cares less about his wife or whatever. It's just different places in time in your life, I guess, you know?
Yeah. Well, my wife is currently pregnant. We have a baby due in December, and I have a 2-year-old.
Oh my God. Congratulations.
Thank you. But I couldn't imagine my life without my kids or my wife. So definitely that would be the best decision I've made.
Good for you, man. Congratulations. Hey man, I hope, you'd be wanting to go on the road with all these little kids running around the house. Trust me.
I get more sleep on the road for sure.
Oh, I'm sure of it, man. Congratulations. That's real nice, man. Best of luck with everything. Most important things you've learned about yourself, Ryan.
Most important thing I've learned about myself. I know we kind of touched on it earlier, but I tend to worry about things too much.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I've learned to let things happen and instead of always trying to control how it's going to go or worry about it. I used to worry about a lot of things that I couldn't control.
Yeah.
And once I let that go, life's been a lot easier, a lot better.
You know, a buddy of mine told me this about 6 to 8 months ago. It's about this, and it really helped me. So I always want to pass it along when someone talks about this. He said, Craig, don't be part of the results committee. And I was like, man, that is really, really good. He said, just do what you got to do. Leave it up to, you know, whatever the universe, your higher power, whatever that is for you, or just, you know, the air. And there you go. There's your, wow. A real live little girl.
Where's your mommy?
SCS.
Can you go say hi to mommy for me? What?
Oh my God. She looks just like you, man. It's quite funny. It's like a mini you.
Hi.
Hello, sweetie. That's okay. Funny.
Daddy's got work, okay? Go say hi to mommy or go play the drums.
Yeah, so he said just do what you got to do. Don't be part of the results committee. And that really helped me out a lot. It just freeing, kind of like what you just talked about. Best childhood memory?
I would say getting together with a drummer and a bass player for the first time. I mean, I was really young, but the excitement of getting in a room and playing for the first time and it actually sounding like drums, bass, and guitar, you know, it definitely had a profound effect on me. Obviously, to this day, I still strive to get that feeling.
Yeah. That is a fairly common answer. The first time somebody made music together, that feeling is pretty common. Someone or something you miss from your childhood?
You know, I've lost touch with quite a few friends from my childhood. I definitely would love to see them again and see where they are. One of them in particular was just the kid that lived across the street from me. He actually, I got him to start playing bass because I didn't know anyone that played bass, and we were in bands together. And he ended up just disappearing. You know, he's not on Facebook. He's
off the grid.
Off the grid. The number I got from him like 15 years ago doesn't work anymore. So,
do you want to put his name out there just on the off chance?
George Mason. George Mezinier.
George
Mezinier. It's French.
Okay. George Mezinier, man. If you know George.
He actually lives in Tampa.
Get out. That's so funny.
Yeah. And I can't get in touch with him.
There you go. Let's put it out there in the universe, man. Let's see if it happens. Let me know if he winds up connecting.
Oh, I will.
That would be very cool. I'd be really happy about that. Who's had the biggest influence on your life musically and then also personally?
Oh, well, I think personally, my family, I mean, they raised me, my mom and dad and my brother. I would say musically, my first two guitar teachers, I feel like I still use stuff that they taught me way back when, you know, it's the same concepts, the same, they kind of got me on the path of thinking about music the way I think about it now.
It's very cool. Most important thing your dad taught you?
To be smart with my money.
That's an important lesson, man.
It's a definitely a dad lesson. It doesn't sound too flowery, but it's definitely helped me for sure.
How about your mom? Most important thing she taught you?
I think she taught me the value of working hard. And not assuming that, you know, because a lot of times when you're a kid and they say, what do you want to do with your life? And, you know, the flowery answer is, I just want to be happy. I want to do whatever makes me happy. And my mom always said that, you know, no one said life is a bowl of cherries is what she would say. She was like, you have to work. You have to put the time in. You have to, you know. You know, you have to lift your finger. It's not going to always be happiness. Sometimes it's going to be work. But because of the hard work you put into it, you'll get more enjoyment out of life.
Good stuff. Any hobbies outside of music?
I like to paint.
Oh, that's cool. What kind of paint?
Well, I've dabbled in oils, but mostly acrylic.
That's cool, man. What do you like to paint?
Not very good. I paint mostly musical instruments.
I was just going to say guitars. I know it. Oh, that's great.
Working on one. I want to do a painting of an Ibanez tube screamer.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. Very cool, man. But now you got to go buy a vintage one. So this justifies purchase.
Yeah. I'm always looking for an excuse to buy a new gear.
Hey, what's the... funniest thing that's happened to you on stage or in the studio?
Let's see. Well, I can name funny for the band.
Yeah.
Maybe at the expense of Ken, our lead singer. But I think one of the funniest things that happened to us is Ken did a misstep on stage one time and actually fell through the drum set.
Oh, my God. Ugh.
The drum set just disintegrated, but Mark, our drummer, was determined to keep the song going. So he's like hitting the snare drum and the hi-hat while they're on the ground and grabbing the mic and trying to get it to make sound. And finally, we just gave up. We went, no, we're not going to recover from this. I had a good laugh about it, but it was hilarious.
Where was that? Where did that happen?
I believe it was in Colorado.
That's interesting.
This is years ago. This was 90s. Shenanigans. And then there was one time where we were playing a festival and they had the big subwoofers off the front of the stage, but there was a gap of about 3 feet between the subwoofers and the stage, but the same height. So if you weren't paying attention, it looked like the stage just kept going. And Ken, our singer, just went up to the front of the stage and then disappeared.
Oh my God.
He fell down in the crack. The 3 feet between the subwoofer and the stage.
Wow. That's scary.
I hate to throw Ken under the bus with that stuff, but I embarrass myself every day. He only does it a couple times a decade, but his are funnier than mine.
And last question, Ryan, and thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it. What's been the biggest change in your personality over the last 10 years, and how much of that has been intentional and how much it's just been a natural part of aging?
Okay. What has changed about me? I think it's probably becoming a common theme with this whole interview is not sweating the small stuff. Like I said, and it's been intentional that, you know, I used to let a lot of things upset me or try to control a lot of things and now I just, the older I get, the more I just kind of let things happen. And the more, I realize that my state of mind, isn't really it's more affected by my attitude and how I perceive things more than reality.
Yeah, that's totally. You know,
if I wake up in the morning and I say I'm going to have a great day and I'm going to be happy, I can make that happen.
Yeah.
Or I can let everything around me that happens negatively take me down. And I've gotten really good at being able to keep myself to keeping a positive perspective on things. And I get a lot more enjoyment out of life when I just decide to be happy. It really is a choice.
Dude, I say that at the end of every show. So
I'll be saying that
in a minute. Absolutely. Yeah. It's one of the most important things I've ever learned in my life. So I'm right with you. Hey man, thank you for everything. Let me tell people where to find you guys. First of all, Sister Hazel, go to sisterhazel.com. Like that's command central for everything. Yeah. Also the band has an official Sister Hazel Facebook and Instagram, and all the individual band members also have individual Facebook pages. You can go to also the rockboat.com. That's the event on the boat that Sister Hazel's been doing a little over 20 years. The next one's scheduled, hopefully, fingers crossed, for fall of 2021. And anything else? If you're interested in beer, get the Ale For You beer. Give that a shot. Give that a shot and drink responsibly. Anything else, man?
Our charity is called Lyrics for Life. If you'd like to be involved for that, you can, sisterhazel.com can direct you in the right direction.
Fantastic. Hey man, good luck with the baby.
Thank you very much. I'm going to start taking little naps now so I can get ready for the new one.
Well, you need it. Hang on one second. Let me wrap this up. Thank you very much for your time, Ryan. I appreciate it. Enjoyed talking with you, man.
Thank you.
Everybody, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this, please share it on your social media channels. We appreciate your support. Thanks very much to Ryan Newell from Sister Hazel. Again, check out therockboat.com, sisterhazel.com, and all the guys and the band have social media pages. And most important, especially nowadays, man, remember that happiness really is a choice, so choose wisely. Be nice, go play your guitar, and have fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. I am out. Ryan, thank you so much for everything, brother.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Everyone Loves Guitar. If you did, make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com/subscribe and subscribe to the audio podcast and to our very active YouTube community. And if you have any comments, please write me at everyonelovesguitar.com/hello. We'll see you on the next episode. Until then, make sure you choose happiness, relax, and have as much fun as possible.